Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts. I'm David Fleming. Tonight's KVC Arts is devoted entirely to, arguably, amongst the first all-female rock bands.
I'm not starving, but I'm kind of hungry. My heart beats. I'm not exactly dying. Kind of living is kind of dying.
Fanny Walked the Earth is Gene and June Millington and Bree Howard. It's a regrouping, really, of not only Fanny, that's what they were recording as in the early 70s, but it really goes earlier, to high school. I spoke with June Millington about not only the band and disc, of course, but also IMA, the Institute for Musical Arts, a nonprofit working with women and girls in the world of music and the music business. This disc, Fanny Walks the Earth, this is the first time that you and Gene and Bree all recorded in close to 50 years now together?
Yeah, I mean, Bree was our second drummer in high school, really. Mm-hmm. That's where Fanny all starts, was our band The Svelts in high school. And Bree was our second drummer, so she started playing with us in 1966 at the end of the summer, but the band The Svelts started in late 64 when a girl from another high school called me and Gene and said, "Yeah, I play the drums. I heard you guys are good. You want to start a band?" And the first song we learned, because we were just playing acoustic guitars then.
Sure.
But my mom went with us to a record store. We went around our dad. He's a real Yankee from Vermont, you know. He and I are half Filipino. My mom's Filipina, so you know, she saw that it made us happy. So she signed for some amps and electric guitar, bass, and a PA. So that was late 64, and by 66, Bree was our second drummer, and by 67, Alice DeBure was our third drummer. And so those two, Bree and Alice, we just really lucked out because they both played in Fanny.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And then you got Bree back for Fanny Walked the Earth.
Yeah.
This is really
and
cool.
You know, I got to tell you, it's back in the day, to find a girl who could actually play drums,
right,
was like a miracle, and we had three. Don't ask me how. I mean, it's just like rock and roll karma, I guess. It was our destiny because, you know, I've played with a lot of drummers with my life. And please, I mean, these women, our first three drummers, are incredible.
It's really a good point that you talked about, that you just brought up, that it was hard to find a good, solid female drummer. It was such a male-dominated world. Well, it still,
We made some headway. And, you know, I'm part of the revolution because I co-founded the Institute for the Musical Arts, where we recorded most of this album right here.
We're all in this together.
We've got two studios, and we do rock and roll girls camps, and we're playing it forward, you know? But anyway, I'm a drum aficionado. I don't actually care if it's a man or woman or anything in between, you know? But it's just amazing that our first three drummers were so good. They just really are so good. And there was a tribute to me in early 2016 here in Northampton. There was literally a tribute to June Millington, and we played two Fanny songs at the end of the show. Gene and Bree flew in, and from the second we hit it, it was incredible. I mean, it was like we were 17 again, but better, you know?
This tribute to June Millington, that's a shocker.
A producer in town came to IMA, you know, because IMA is dedicated to women in music, and he thought it would be great if they did one that was specifically focused in on me as, let's say, a historical figure, which, okay, I am.
I like that a lot.
We're the change. We are here on this day. This is a promise to you, a promise we made.
It turned out to be great, you know, and it really lit a fire under the three of us just because, you know, it's just happenstance that they both came. I mean, you know, we were really good in the 60s.
Yeah.
And we got only better, and now we're at the height of kind of our power to understand what it is that we're doing. I mean, yes, we play really, really, really well, but it's the wisdom that comes in and the confidence that adds so much to the picture.
That's something that is stated through this disc. It's a mix of who we were, who we are, what happened, or it happened here, quite literally.
Yeah, and it's also partly understanding what's going on. Now, for example, It Happened Here is the name of a documentary that I happened to see that's about campus rape. And I was so blown away by it. The first story actually took place at UMass, which is, you know, 20 minutes from here. We're just outside of Northampton, the Five Colleges area. And I was so blown away and actually so upset about what I learned from that film that the next day I wrote the entire song, exactly as you hear it.
It happened here. I want to make clear. It happens more than you want to know. More than we'll ever know here. You can't trust the night. So-called friends can't look them in the eye here. Feel so fragile. Why so fragile?
We're speaking with June Millington, amongst the founders of the group Fanny, more at fannywalktheearth.com. June's also the founder of IMA, the Institute for Musical Arts, a nonprofit working with women and girls in the world of music, more at ima.org. I'm David Fleming. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, also at kvcrnews.org.
We were in Sacramento, and racism played such a big part in our being ignored at school, except that we heard the music, we could feel it, and I started to write right away, and I wrote a song called Miss Wallflower of 62 that we played at the variety show, and all of a sudden, kids started to talk to us in the halls. So not only did we know we loved to play, now it gave us a social cachet, and it was all over. That was what we were going to do.
It gave you an in. You were no longer the other. It was,
you got that right.
Nice. You did mention that, and I won't dwell too much on the earliest of days, but I do recall one interview you gave, or this could have been from your MySpace page. I've been all over. But you mentioned that as soon as you heard a guitar, when you were still only on ukulele at this point, when you first heard a guitar, tell us about this point. Can you take yourself back to that?
It was a really tough year with seventh grade in Manila, and all of a sudden, our parents put me and Jean in a Catholic girls' school. It was where all my mother's relatives went. It was called Assumption College. And, you know, you actually had to wear the veil and the uniform and, you know, go to benediction every day after classes. Anyway, at the very end of the school year, we already knew we were moving to the U.S., but we didn't know where. My dad had come ahead to kind of figure out where we were going. It was one of the very last days of school, and Mother Milagros was really strict. it was at the end of the day of the end of the school year, and I heard this sound. Then literally, I got up out of my seat like I was sleepwalking. And you know in movies when everything stops and everyone freezes and one person moves?
Yeah.
That was it. I stood up. No one seemed to see me. I mean, Mother Milagros never let you even move without her permission. So I stand up and I walk down the hall, which was actually an open-air veranda, about two classrooms down. There was this girl on the far right corner, and she was facing the corner, so I couldn't even see her face. She was playing an acoustic guitar, and I remember thinking to myself, why didn't anyone tell me? Because in that instant, I knew that was my ticket. It just freed me up. I was on a magic carpet ride, you know, way before that song was ever written. And I was just frozen with the magic of it. She never turned around. I just stood there for like maybe 5 minutes, and then I turned around, went back to the classroom, and it was like they were still frozen in time. I went and sat in my class, and then everyone started to move again. But I went home, and I just could not stop talking about this guitar I had heard. And my birthday was coming up in a few weeks, and we were leaving the country. So my mom, who made a last trip to the southern Philippines, brought back for me a surprise 13th birthday present, which was a small handmade mother of pearl inlay guitar from the southern Philippines, and that started the whole thing.
Wow,
it's my mom. I mean, she signed for the instruments a few years later. Without our mom, none of this would have happened. I'm telling you.
Yeah,
you got your mom behind you like that, and it just gives you that support and that confidence. And I feel like that's what IMA in large part does, because they come here, they come to classes, they're in the magical queendom, you know, no one can interrupt them for teens. It's 10 days. They stay here, they eat here, and they have the support. And once you come to one of our rock camps, then you can start borrowing equipment during the year, and that makes a big deal. So that, in a way, it's like the surrogate mom. You know, it's what happened to me that we're spreading it out, because we're changing the industry from the inside out.
Yes, indeed. Something that you were doing, again, I'm probably really bastardizing another quote from you, so I won't even try, but you were going from the quote, girly acoustic folk thing, and then you plugged in and wrote and performed some serious rock. This is when you got your little Sears guitar.
My boyfriend was in a surf band when we were in high school.
Ah.
That's really how we got onto electric before that girl called us, the drummer, Kathy Terry.
Mm-hmm.
So we would go to their gigs and rehearsals, and we just kind of stand around and watch. You know, Gene was the girlfriend, and, you know, I got involved with somebody else hanging around. And then they let us play in between their sets, like at bowling alleys, but it was still like, you know, we had hooked up with two other girls who sang at Hootenanny's along with us, and we would do, like, Heat Wave with four acoustic guitars and four girls. But it was good.
Yeah.
And then there was a gig that opened up, and we auditioned for it along with a couple of other boy bands, including this one, and we got the gig. And from that point on, we couldn't use their equipment. So that's when my mom went with us to the record store. I mean, it was just like that. We got the gig. The boys shut up. It's like, you know, when you hire someone in the band because they have the van. It was kind of like that. I mean, rock, being in a band is so predictable, you know, in that sense. There's just certain things you got to have. You got to have some gear, and you got to have a way to get there.
Yeah, that's the van. Gosh.
I mean, the Beatles drove around in a car that didn't have a front windshield in the snow, you know. They were going to get to the gig. We used to put on makeup just, you know, in the car on the freeway 5 minutes before we got to the gig in Idaho or wherever. I'm talking about the Svelte. I'm not talking about Fanny. So by the time we got our record deal and got to L.A., we were really experienced. And like Jimmy said, are you experienced? We were. But as girls, you know, I'm sure guys weren't changing outfits and putting on makeup and, you know, fighting for that mirror in the car.
Something I briefly touched on a second ago, the decision to go electric, to do, quote, and here I am quoting what the boys were doing. So it's interesting to bring this up even as a notion, since we have had many serious female rock bands or solo artists, you know, Heart, the Runaways, and with the exception of, say, Wanda Jackson, you know, you predate all of the folks that I just mentioned.
Yeah.
And that is, you are truly, truly a trailblazer in this.
We just had to do it. You know, if we didn't have any goal because there was no one to compete against. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I want to be just like who? You know, nobody.
Right, right. there were maybe other bands, but this was so pre-internet or any kind of thing like that.
Yeah, no, it was like we wanted to light, you know, come on, baby, light my fire in ourselves.
Right.
But, you know, that took listening to the voices that, you know, are the voices of destiny. We just heard it and we followed it. Honestly, like being in front of Milagros, we just got up out of the chair and walked out and just started to do it.
So let me ask then, were you doing what you wanted to do and just happened to be women, or was it a much more active, we are women and we're doing this? It was an all-female.
No, you couldn't think of it as we are women and we're doing this, because you couldn't possibly have that self-confidence. You know?
Okay.
I mean, remember, there were no mirrors. There was nothing mirroring us back to ourselves.
Mm.
So it was a completely different world. Think of it as being in a cave, but you're trying to draw something or, you know, play, but it's in the complete dark.
Yeah.
And then little by little, there's a little bit of light, but you're the one providing it, you know. It's just a different context. I mean, I hope I'm describing it in a way that makes sense. But we couldn't try to be like anybody else. We completely were doing it because it just fulfilled us. It was just such satisfaction. And
beautiful.
Everything else was kind of accidental. The fact that we were girls, okay, all right. But we were going to do it. I mean, I'd be in German class and I'd be writing in my notebook, the Svelte, the Svelte, the Svelte. It was upset.
Excellent.
We got really good grades, but we would sneak out of our rooms and I had to drive to, you know, to wherever to rehearse with a couple of other girls. I mean, the important thing was we kept up the appearances. We got good grades. We didn't snarl at people. We were nice girls. We could slam. So it was creating our own parallel dimension and just stepping into it.
Walking streets of light, knowing just how to rock our scene.
We couldn't really tell people, we didn't talk about being in a band or we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Because, you know, I might as well have said we're going to walk on the moon.
Yeah.
Honestly, it would have been the same thing, so there's no context for it. The fact is that we just kept putting out light until it started to come back to us. We created our own reflection, and now we can talk about other girl bands and how we predated them. But saying that we predated them is just, you know, it's so understated. So 75 was the year it really exploded for me. And,
nice.
You know, I went on the road with Chris Williamson and Women's Music.
Yes.
I didn't want to go as drag kicking and screaming into the feminist world. But it really opened me up so much because I had to deal with now racism. And I had to deal with, sexism?
Yes.
You know, I didn't want to look at it. I just wanted to just keep turning up louder.
Yeah. You're soaking in it now.
Motherfuckers, I just turn up louder. You don't want to listen to me? No, now you got to listen to me.
That's right. That's Walk the Earth in a nutshell right there. We're daughters mixing oil and water.
Right.
And humbly stated, badass and really good.
Yeah, that's Brie. She woke up from a dream. She had that second verse. Because we started to write it, and Brie had kind of defined, along with Genia, because I get up later, I have rock and roll hours, like I said.
Yep.
So they get up in the morning, and they brainstorm on stuff, and they told me the sort of code of the song, which is that we would reference songs that we played in the 60s at clubs, like Knock on Wood or Groovin', you know.
Mm-hmm.
The code is all in there if you just look at the lyrics.
Sure. Well, I found In the Midnight Hour, and I don't know if Satisfaction was part of that. Music from the new disc, Fanny Walked the Earth. We are speaking with June Millington, among the founders of the group. More at fannywalktheearth.com. More with June just ahead. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. Also at kvcrnews.org. This edition of KVC Arts is devoted to Fanny, amongst the first all-female rock bands. The new disc is June and Gene Millington, along with Brie Howard, now called Fanny Walked the Earth. So looking then at Fanny Walked the Earth, it's a very, very new CD, and there are a couple of ways of approaching the disc, Fanny Walked the Earth. You can go song order or you could go song writer. I'm going to say the first couple are Breeze, that's Lured Away,
yeah,
and She Comes.
Yeah, with her husband, Dave. David Darling.
Is he the cellist, David Darling?
No. He's the record producer, guitarist. He plays keys, too. And he has, in fact, a great voice. They had a band called Walking Gandhis or Fighting Gandhis. Which one? He had a hit with his song, If You Love Me, Why Do I Hurt So Much? Or something like that.
Oh.
Boxing Gandhis.
Oh, okay.
That's Dave.
Okay.
That's his band, and that's his song, and that's his vocal. But he's turned into producer.
That's far different than the cellist, new age David Darling.
I actually know him.
Okay. So the first song on this disc that's a collaboration, that's not one of Breeze tunes, that is Walk the Earth. And since this one is credited to all three of you, this
and
is the
And in fact,
song.
Dave is also included because he wrote track. And so the demo that we worked off of right here in the studio was him with the track, a demo track, and humming. And it wasn't really that long, so we had to just, you know, we made up the bridge, you know. I mean, we added to it. But basically, that's his song structure and the basic melody of the verses. I'm the one who added Walk the Earth, you know, walk the earth. That was me because it just came up, you know. But Bree and Gene came up with the concept of what the lyrics were going to be about.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so did Bree bring something in and then Gene added to it, or did they get together over coffee or brandy or bourbon?
I think more coffee, because they would get up in the morning. Like I said, I don't get up in the morning. So by the time I woke up, they would have certain concepts that they discussed, and then I would just join in, you know. Like Walk the Earth, and Bree said, wouldn't it be great if we referenced all those songs we played in the Spelts?
Yeah.
And so that is what we did, and it was pretty easy to do because, you know, singing vocals and harmonies and all that, that's really easy for us because we did all that kind of stuff, you know, in the 60s. I mean, we cut our teeth on the Marvelettes and the Chiffons and, I mean, harmonies, grooving. Yeah, we did that live, and we did To Serve With Love, for heaven's sake. You know, that's not an easy song to cover. But we did Knock on Wood with all those backing harmonies.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. I remember we played clubs, and the gig was, you got people dancing. That was the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And that was great training.
You were in kind of an unfortunate disco era, but you still managed to rock. I appreciated that.
They're all good. You know, I mean, during the disco era, I was in New York, so I learned a lot.
Oh, you were really soaking
in it. Disco overlaps with the coming in of, like, reggae was just before that, and then disco, and then you had the whole Fania thing. I used to just hang out at the Fania recording studio with the engineer. I could walk in anytime, day or night. So my experience is really different from a lot of people's because I'm so consumed with music that I roamed the coasts because I played so much, and I would just go to clubs and I would meet recording engineers and producers, and then, you know, because they saw that I wasn't just a hanger-on, or they let me in. So I'm really familiar with all types of music, and I see the good in all of it. I mean, even disco. But see, there was a phase in which I was hanging out with the people who were making disco records, you know. So, like, a really good friend of mine was Tom Sellers, and he produced Rock the Boat.
Oh, wow, okay.
And he taught me how to write really great rhythm charts and string charts, so that would be around 76, yeah, 75, 76. And then he and I produced an album that Gene and I did called Ladies on the Stage that's, you know, kind of disco, not completely, but that's got a lot of great stuff on it, and that was 77.
Ladies on the Stage.
Yeah.
Let's go back to where it all began.
17, then we started a band. Lugging our gear up and down the stairs. Having so much fun, we didn't really care. Girls on the road, girls on the go. Doing what we knew was gonna save our souls. Riding the wave, coming round the bend. Once you feel the beat, you got to.
One of the ones that is yours, Girls on the Road, talk about an autobiographical tune.
I'm so glad you picked up on that because, you know, from the time that we decided we were doing this album, within 2 weeks that song wrote itself. It just appeared in my head. It was completely effortless.
Well, truly, it's really, how are we going to do this? Well, let's go back to where it all began. And that's it.
17. We started a band. Lugging our gear up and down the stairs. I mean, Gene and I in Sacramento, we ended up with the attic room that was converted to our lair. It was our bedroom slash lair. So that's where we would rehearse with the Svelte, and I would learn songs off of a 45, you know, those small 45 players. I'd just sit by it and learn chords, and then we'd practice harmonies, and then the drummer would lug her drums up the stairs, and we'd rehearse with the drums, you know. And, you know, interestingly, we had different drummers, but it's so cool that Gene and I were always in the band except for the one Fanny album.
Right.
Because, you know, we were both learning on the job together, and Gene really is one of the best players on the planet, bass players. So there you have the spine of the whole thing. You know, if you have a great bass player, boy, you can do anything.
Oh, truly. One more thing on Girls on the Road before we move on from that one is just the fact that not only were you talking about yourself and the band, but you were also talking about what was going on at the time, the boys coming home from war, civil rights.
Yeah, we were just kids. What were they fighting for?
Yes.
I mean, wow. You know, I'm one of those people who believed the rhetoric because I was too young to actually, you know, and shy to be go on mingling. So I was one of those people who would avert my eyes when I saw guys in uniform at the airport or the bus station, you know. And I feel bad about that now because I didn't understand that, hey, they had their lives too.
Right.
I just thought that they were all horrible that they went over there to just hurt people, you know. So, I mean, I really did live through all of that, you know. And there I was at UC Berkeley in 1968, man.
Wow. Oh.
You know, I actually went to UC Davis and UC Berkeley. UC Davis, 66 to 67. The first time I heard the Grateful Dead was there. The entire Buffalo Springfield came and played. All of them. All of Buffalo Springfield, including Stephen Stills with that white hat. I mean, I couldn't believe how good they were.
Wow.
That's when I understood, wow, these guys had decided they were going to be in a band and they were going to be the best. And they were right in front of me in college doing it. What times, you know, it's incredible to even think of those songs, but to think of them rushing your brain, you know, when you're like 18 is really incredible. I mean, that's a hell of a rush.
We are speaking with June Millington, amongst the founders of the group Fanny, more at fannywalktheearth.com. June's also the founder of IMA, the Institute for Musical Arts, a nonprofit working with women and girls in the world of music. More at ima.org. I'm David Fleming. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. We are also at kvcrnews.org.
Step right up, ladies and gentlemen, to the greatest show on earth, the Monkey Mind, led by humanity itself.
Just a little bit more on the album, and that is not my monkey. Okay, this is another one with all three of
them. I can tell you exactly what happened.
Good, good.
So, I made a visit to Gene. Actually, Gene and I had just played in South Bend, Indiana, at Illinois University in South Bend.
Okay.
And rather than coming back here, I decided to go to Gene's because, you know, her grandson had just been born.
Oh, nice.
Not too long before that. And I told Bree I was going to be there. So she flew up from L.A. to just do some pre-production. Well, it just so happened that she and I were sitting alone in the living room when the election results came in.
Ooh.
Need I say more? And
wow.
She was so upset. And I couldn't believe how upset and she was. And she couldn't believe it either. She was shocked. She said, oh, I was lulled into a complacency. I'm so mad at myself. And the next day, we woke up and we were all processing it. And that song was written in one day. On that day.
Welcome to the show.
You know, Gene is the one who came up with Not My Monkey because she is a healer, actually, and she does different modes of kind of healing therapy.
Okay.
And She said, well, you know, one of the things that I use and I say to my clients a lot is that, you know, it's not my monkey.
Okay.
And so that's how, you know, Bree and I were so upset, but then we got together with Gene and all day long we worked on it. And we had dinner and we didn't have that bridge. And I said, just give me a couple of minutes, you know. I want to stay in the kitchen for 15 minutes. Not the kitchen, they were actually talking in the next room. But I said, just give me like 15 minutes. I went into the little shed workshop where we were working and I literally heard it in my head and just found the notes. And so that bridge is just a download. That entire, it's basically guitar riffs and a little bit of a solo, you know. But I'm so glad it happened that way because it's not typical, you know. I just took it into another direction, which is actually what had just happened. We just gone in another direction. I didn't stay in the same key or anything. I changed the key with that descending guitar part.
I noticed that. I truly did. I could not have thought of this as an election. Let's just say a Trump thing. Okay, let's just say.
Baby, welcome to the show. Come on.
I'm going to be listening to it with a new ear now, believe me, because it's staying in the player. That's great. That is great, June. Oh, that is too funny. And again, that was all three of you.
It was a nice spin because it made us feel better. You know, yeah, we just changed the channel. There's a new show going down. There's a new circus in town.
But it's not my monkey.
Not my monkey, yeah.
I get the feeling you write lyrics first and then find a riff to carry them, yes?
No, it's the opposite.
Really?
Actually, most of the time, yeah.
I call that so wrong.
Well, really what it is it's all a download. The book is a download. All the songs are a download. The really cool thing about getting older and having had great spiritual teachers in particular, I mean, I studied with the Dalai Lama before he got the Nobel Peace Prize. I studied with Ruth Dennison doing Vipassana. I do these 2-week silent retreats and quite a few other qualified teachers. I even saw Amachi, the mother, the first time she came to the U.S. I just happened to hear about her from a friend. Nobody knew who she was. It was just in a little house in San Francisco. There were like 12 people, but we all got that hug, you know? Pretty amazing. So I feel like I've been led into a great many secrets, which have all, when I say secrets, I mean teachings. You got to be open to it. I mean, I remember once I was walking down a street in Berkeley sometime, like in the early 80s, and I'm deaf in my left ear, which when you read the book, you'll find out that I didn't know I was probably born deaf. I never heard on the left side. I don't have equilibrium on that side either. Anyway, so I'm walking down the street in Berkeley, and I have intuitive feeling and hearing on my left side. So I felt this poster. So I backed up and I looked at the poster, and it was on a Bardo's teaching with a particular lama in Nevada City when I was only, you know, like an hour and a half from. So I went, and I got an incredible deep Bardo's teaching. So those kinds of things have informed how I listen intuitively to what's coming at me, and if I just slow down enough, I can hear it, and I just go with that, you know. So it's all downloads. I don't feel like I really write anything. What I've done in my life is prepared myself to receive, you know, and my ancestors are behind me, my teachers are behind my mom, my grandmothers, you know. And in the beginning, what was so hard when I was younger, especially in Fanning, was I would be trying to write. And the moments when, you know, you had to stop trying were the times that I got songs like Thinking of You or You've Got a Home, Think About the Children.
Okay. Some of the earlier stuff there. Wow. We're speaking with June Millington, amongst the founders of the group Fanny. More at fannywalktheearth.com. And more with June up in just about a minute. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Online and on mobile devices at kvcrnews.org. We are speaking with June Millington, part of Fanny Walked the Earth, a very new disc. And listening to this, as well as older tracks from Fanny, I would have thought that June would be one to write the words and then find the music to go with it. It's really quite the other way around.
Of a thousand riffs.
I love
riffs.
Okay.
That's my thing. I love riffs. And so that's when you were asking about do the lyrics come first?
Yes.
No, typically a riff comes first. And then I start hearing a melody, and then the words start fitting themselves in as I mumble a melody.
Oh.
But let's say the beginning of Not My Monkey was actually a riff that I started here the last day of our very first pre-production session. So, it was the last day, and we kind of, you know, already kind of played for 5 days straight. So we just kind of let go of it. You know, we couldn't think of anything to go with that. We didn't want to make ourselves uptight, quite frankly.
Yeah.
So I kind of filed it away. And then when we needed something for when Bree and I were so upset about the election results, I popped that lick. And all of a sudden, there came that song in one day.
Mm.
So you just got to, you know, kind of squirrel stuff away and then just pull it out another time. And one of the times, it's going to be right.
The sun always shines, there where the storms begin to rise.
Was Stormcrossed one of those as well?
Yeah, what happened with Stormcrossed was I got a call, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, from someone in New York who said there's a movie being made about, believe it or not, an all-girl band that reformed later in life. And, yeah, and they need a woman who's over 50, is Asian or part Asian, and can play bass. And I said, well, that's my sister. And so I asked Gene, he said, I'm too busy. The weird thing is that the days that the scenes for this character were being shot were right in between two rock and roll girls camps. I mean, I couldn't believe it. So I sent in a demo reel. They said, well, we really want you. Would you send in a demo reel? So for the demo reel, I just stood in the barn, and the opening lick for Stormcross came to me. That very first lick. That whole thing came to me with no words, just that riff, you know. And because I got it on video because of the reel.
Oh, yeah.
Then I referenced it like a year later. I went, God, that's really good. So maybe, you know, maybe some words will come. And so the first verse came up to, you rule me. No,
yeah.
In fact, I think I didn't have you rule me. I didn't know what that was going to be. And that came at Bree's house right after we decided we're going to do the record.
Ah.
And then the rest of it wrote itself. So the very first part of it was just a lick,
okay.
You know.
Well, Stormcrossed, as you were describing earlier, I can see how that kind of grunting and growling eventually becoming articulated as something close to words. I can see that actually on that one. Yeah.
There were a lot of licks to choose from once I got the first verse. It's like, So every lick in between the lines on the verses was actually something that a bunch of licks came out in, and I just chose what I thought were the best signature licks.
Mm.
And I think I made the right choices, you know?
Oh, my God.
And then the bridge wasn't written until right before Gene and Bree came in June 2016. I had no bridge.
Really?
And I kept thinking, God, what could possibly be a bridge to this? And all of a sudden, that completely different tempo, completely different thing, and going to a different world, you know?
Yep,
where the storms begin to rise. I'm like, oh, wow. And plus, most of those chords were like little mistakes that I, you know, I was kind of fooling around. I make a mistake because I tape everything while I'm writing. I say, I got to learn that mistake. That's what the bridge was, a series of guitar mistakes with cool lyrics. So you got to be open up to the failures, what you could perceive as a failure. That's something I share at the girls' camps, you know, like, let's have a good time. I'm going to fail, you're going to fail, but you know what? You'll be surprised at what we're going to do together, you know?
Well, you know what? There is a segue if we ever wrote one. So let's go to IMA. Briefly and very succinctly put, I guess after you left Fanny, there was a series of, solo records, also you with Chris and Jackie, and then...
Well, getting involved with Olivia Records, because that's when I first heard the voices, you know. There was a meeting called at Olivia, which Chris asked me to go to, and I did it as a favor to her. It was basically they wanted to get more women of color involved in the structure of the company. So I went to the meeting, and I was hearing all the stuff that I thought was kind of, you know, pie-in-the-sky stuff. Like, nobody's ever going to be more popular than each other. This is totally egalitarian. We're all going to share the money equally. We're going to build a studio. No one will get charged. And this voice because I already done rock and roll and I knew how the business worked. I heard this voice go, well, somebody needs to take care of all these girls coming up in the future. So that appeared, and then 10 years later, exactly 1986, I started to hear those voices again. But then they started to come into my dreams. And I was, at the time, doing an awful lot of gigs between San Francisco and the East Coast. And I was in San Francisco for this period, and I had met Angela Davis. So I was hanging out with her, and I told her about this very strong voice. She said, well, get going. And I'm like, I shrieked, no, not me. I'm not an organizer, which is absolutely true. I have ideas. I'm not an organizer. But she said, well, they're talking to you, so get started. My sister's an attorney. I will, you know, hook you up with her. So for about a year, Ann and I drove around the country literally and did small concerts or house concerts, small women's bookstores, small productions, and I raised enough money, or the two of us raised enough money to get the 501c3. You know, it was really difficult to get the paperwork done because the IRS, for one, didn't understand what we were talking about. I mean, literally, it took so long because they couldn't see. I mean, they'd be reading an organization for women and girls in music, you know, and they couldn't get it. They couldn't see it. It was bizarre.
It seems kind of straightforward to me.
Yeah, but, you know, for women and girls in music, when there's poverty in the world, when there's all these problems, I mean, they at the time, now it's different. That was 86. And this is 2018. So in that interim period, now you have the Me Too movement.
Sure.
Now you have girls speaking up. Back then, for the IRS to understand that as a block, right? B-L-O-C, of people who understood that this is important, that rock and roll and supporting women in music, not just rock, but everything. We support everything for all of time, past, present, and future. Is so important because it supports the confidence, it supports creativity, it supports getting stuff done. If you don't get any support when you're a teenage girl, especially when the hormones start to hit and you realize how dangerous it is to be a girl and a woman, it's really tough. And I see that playing out at camp. If we're talking about IMA, I mean, one of my big jobs I realized within the first few years is to help guide the girls back into their bodies without fear, because you cannot find the one, right, in a tempo.
Right.
You can't find the one unless you're in your body. You can't. And I have seen this happen time and time and time again. They can't find the one because they're, you know what? I realized it was an epiphany for me. It changed everything. Oh, my God, they're running away from their bodies. So I got to bring them back in before I can teach them anything about rhythm.
Wow.
It's pretty incredible. I realized they are running for their bodies. So what did I do? Then I found out that the only way to bring them back in is to seduce them with their own joy. Somehow I trick them into enjoying themselves. Then they forget that they were totally terrified 5 minutes ago. And then they start getting used to, oh, this is fun. And, oh, we're writing a song. I never knew I could do that. And boom, 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 boom. Then you have a show, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. It's completely life-altering. And it's a paradigm shift.
So 86, this is going on 32
That's right.
years now.
Yeah. We weren't able to start our Rock and Roll Girls Camp until we bought this property because you have to be able to control everything, you know. When you start a Rock and Roll Girls Camp, you know, the insurance changes. You got to, you know, make sure that the food that you serve is safe serve and all that kind of stuff. So it's a big deal. You have to control the parking. And that's why we're the only, as far as I know, the only Rock and Roll Girls Camps in the world that go on for like 10 days. Without interruption. I mean, all the other ones, you've got to drop off the girls and pick them up, you know, later in the day.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's the nighttime where the stuff really happens.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's when they jam. That's when they talk, you know?
We are speaking with June Millington, amongst the founders of the group Fanny, more at fannywalktheearth.com. Also amongst the founders of IMA, the Institute for Musical Arts, more at ima.org. How long did it take from the idea, this is what we need to do, before
it finally
started?
We didn't even think of that as needing to do. We were just trying to just form it, right?
Oh, okay.
So 86, 87. Then we were able to buy this property. We did programming in Bodega, California, till 2000. And then we moved into this space in 2001. We were able to get the money together to buy a property. And immediately, I mean, we did a benefit in Northampton, and immediately a mom who lives right down the street came to us because we mentioned that we were going to start doing Girl Scout. We realized, oh, my God, now we can do something like that. And she came, so we were going to wait till 2003. And she said, no, you can't wait because my daughter needs you right now. And that's how we started in 2002. It was because a mom let us know of the need. And by the way, her daughter, Sonia Kitchell, who's now a recording artist living in Brooklyn.
Beautiful. For someone to find out more about this, is it simply ima.org and there's the launching for everything else as far as getting in contact?
That's exactly right. Yeah, okay. That's exactly right. That's the best place to go.
Okay, and when are these camps?
The first one is a preteen, and it's whatever are the 5 days that work right before July 4th. And then the first teen camp is right after July 4th, and then there's 5 days in between the second teen camp. Then beginning of August is the recording camp, and right after that, like bookends, end of August is the second preteen camp.
Okay.
So they're all 10 days except for preteen, because to tell you the truth, we used to start at 8. Now we start at 9, so 9 to anything that says teen, so 9 to 12, because moms and their daughters haven't been separated yet, and it's kind of traumatic for them, so we have to make it a little shorter. That's the first separation, you know, because they can't drop by.
Wow.
This is the magical queendom, so none of the parents, nobody can drop by. I don't even let my friends drop by.
Oh, that is cool. That is.
Yeah, and that's how it happens. They go into their own magical world, and that's when things get created that they have no belief in when they first walk in.
That's right.
You know, they can't imagine it, and quite frankly, neither can I. But we provide the space and the intent, and it works.
You know, gosh, now I want to go into all sorts of theater theory and all this kind of stuff. This is I grew up. But it sounds just a wonderful opportunity for a person to let go of anything that they think that somebody else knows about them and then present what's really inside.
That's right. And that's why the nighttime is so important for these girls, because that's when they get to talk, really, about what's happening. And then they can start visioning and determining their future, which starts that night and the next day and so on, because they have the place to actualize it right away, because they're safe. They're not safe unless they're here, really.
Don't let nobody tell you any different, because you know that you're a cool girl. Talking will fade, let it go, yeah, yeah.
FannyWalksTheEarth.com, there's the website. Is there a Facebook presence as well? What's the best? Social media?
There's a Fanny Walk the Earth page and 2 June Millington pages. There's a Land of a Thousand Bridges page, and there's a Play Like a Girl page, which focuses on me and Gene and the album we recorded in 2010, Play Like a Girl.
Cool Girl, wrapping up the disc, Fanny Walked the Earth, and wrapping up another edition of KVC Arts, along with the conversation from original and founding Fanny member June Millington. As this show came out of the KVC archives, what's been referred to as a new disc is almost 2 years old by now. More at FannyWalkTheEarth.com, and more on the Institute for Musical Arts at IMA.org. Thanks again to June Millington, and here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, and Sharina Wad. Beyond the music of Fanny, or Fanny Walk the Earth, music beds and themes heard on KVCR, it's composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which you can do any time of the year. Needed now, more than ever. Go to kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.